are listening to The Bradshaw Boys, a podcast where three relatively grown men binge the iconic HBO series Sex and the City. So dust off those DVDs and grab yourself a white wine or even a Cosmopolitan and settle in. Take it away, boys.
Welcome to The Bradshaw Boys, a podcast where three guys watch their way through Sex and the City for the first time ever, mostly. I'm Corey Cavan.
I'm Kevin James Doyle.
My name is John Sieber.
And today we are so excited to have a friend and an amazing guest on the podcast. A friend is, it's true. Okay. So he's an actor. He's an actor. He's been in TV shows like Veep and Arrested Development and movies like Toy Story 4. And I would call him a friend, but we'll talk about that. Please welcome Tony Hale.
Hello.
How's it going?
Tony, thank you so much for joining us.
It gives me a lot of joy that you guys are going through Sex in the City. I just think it's really funny.
I think that the best you can hope for in an actor's career is to, you know, to do all the things that you've gone on to do, and then at that point get to talk about this one TV show you did one episode and three lines for one hour.
One little sliver of a scene.
Literally a sliver of a scene, and also to set up the episode over Zoom while all of us are trying to figure it out. My cable guy literally came and interrupted the setup, and
because he wanted a face to face time with you, he said, right?
Because he did, yeah. He made a face to face appointment with me. It has nothing to do with setting up the cable.
He just wanted to be around humans again. He's like, this is my one chance.
Totally. Yeah, he was like, listen, six feet, I'm still close.
I am thrilled to dive into the character of Tiger.
Well, get ready. It's another Tiger King, guys.
this is the real Tiger King.
When he sang that song, I Saw a Tiger, that's what it was about.
Thank you.
It was about that.
It was
season two
of four, whatever it was, of Sex in the City.
season four, episode two.
Now, so listen, yeah, as silly as it is, we're super excited to have you. And also something that I think people will be really excited about is like what it was like. Can you take us? Do you remember the audition process?
No.
Like, how did you?
I don't remember the audition process. I remember being on set and I was petrified. Well, you have to understand. This was 1999.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
So this was 21 years ago, and wow. And Sex and the City was like the show. And I was mainly doing commercials. That was kind of my main gig. And then I got the audition for it. I don't remember it, but I got the audition. I got it. I was so petrified because like Sarah Jessica Parker, those four women were like, they define New York. And they also, it was like the big gig to get. That and Sopranos were the two gigs to get. And so I went on set and I read the scene that I'm, what's her name? Kim Cattrall is going to be having naked pictures taken, and I'm the photographer's assistant. And the photographer was this guy named Jeff Forney. He's a really nice guy. We've actually stayed in touch to this day.
Oh wow!
There's a whole story, but I was on set and I was just kind of like, really, I had never been on set that much. I had never seen like grips and cameras and free food and all that kind of stuff. I was just like, oh my God. Anyways, I made an ass of myself, but I can get into that. Or I can go into that now, whatever you want. Yeah. I don't know Sex in the City process.
Yeah, man. Just buckle up.
I want to hear that. Were you living in New York at the time?
I was. I moved here in 1995, and then I was here till 2003. I think we shot at Silver Cup Studios, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I just didn't sleep the night before. And it's also just starting out, I was like, maybe someone's going to see this scene. Someone's going to see me on set and be like, that's the guy that needs to be a series regular from this day forward. Like Tiger needs to be on every single episode.
And they keep getting photo shoots.
Cut to, I made just an ass of myself because anyways, I'm supposed to kind of oogle Kim Cattrall while she's having these nude photos taken. And I thought it would be a good idea to go up to her and say, and apologize and say, "Hey, Kim, I just want to apologize because I pretty much have to objectify you most of this day. And I'm sorry," thinking that she would be like, "Oh, that's really nice." She thought I was a freak and did not even look me in the eyes for the rest of the day. And I got the sense also she might have been telling other crew members that I was a little off base. And so, I mean, just imagine the insecurity that was just flooding my body.
Oh my gosh.
Which, by the way, she might not have done any of this, but my insecure self was on fire. Fire.
And did you, wait, did you say, was this your first TV thing?
Or I did a little, the same size role on The Sopranos in New York, but that might have been the same year, but I can't remember whether this was the first or that was the first, but it was a big deal.
Did there happen to be any connection between the casting directors on getting Sex and the City and The Sopranos, or was that too totally, did they see Tiger and they're like, "We got to have you on The Sopranos"?
Yeah. They saw Tiger and they're like, "You know what? This guy needs to play a nurse oncologist on The Sopranos." I don't know if it was the same. I actually don't even know who the casting, I don't remember any. I blocked most of New York out, but
and then you told James Gandolfini, you're like, "I'm sorry, I was oogling you this entire time." Exactly. He's like, "What the fuck are you talking about?"
Yeah, exactly. I was a nurse practitioner who was giving chemo to Uncle Junior, that storyline.
Oh yeah.
And
oh,
I remember I had to put the needle in his, not in his arm, but I had to look like I was putting a needle in his arm. And I was shaking so bad. And I remember thinking a viewer is going to be like, "Who hires a nurse oncologist who is shaking, putting a needle into somebody's arm for chemo?" It was awful.
I have a question, an actory question, I guess, which is those are like two examples that you're like super nervous, and your roles on Arrested Development and Veep are like kind of quintessential racked with nervousness people.
But
just talking to you already, you seem like a chill, normal, you're not Buster right now, but is there a connection between those characters and what your natural disposition is?
Yeah. I've struggled with anxiety most of my life. And so way years ago, and they kind of still do, my nerves manifested with acting in my hands. I would start shaking. Some people kind of get their pits get sweat or whatever. Mine, I would just shake. And so I would, even doing theater back in New York, I would have to have, if I was carrying something, I would have to put weight in the cup, or if I was doing an audition, I'd have to have something behind the sheet because I knew my hands would shake. But to your point, a lot of my anxiety is, it was very easy to get into Buster and Gary, and I do codependency, anxiety, and emasculation really well. It's a forte of mine.
All right. So this episode, actually, this is one of our first rewatches we've ever done because this went down when we did a poll with our listeners. This was their up through season four. This was the number one favorite episode of all time.
Well, guys, Tiger, I don't even know why you had to discover that.
It was, a lot of people thought it had to do with the fashion element. A lot of people thought it had to do with, It was all Tiger.
It was the cap backwards, the big fat chin, the just wide eye, the wide eyed stupid look that did it.
Did you watch the episode when it came out? Was that an exciting? That must have been a really exciting thing for you to be a part of that show. That's so iconic, New York. Live in New York. Did you get together with friends and watch it?
I'm sure I did. Again, I don't remember, but it was, I just was, oh my God, that was such a big get. And so I told everybody. However, I will say this. I might not have told everybody because when I first started my career, when I was doing commercials, I remember getting a commercial for MCI and I told my whole family, I told extended relatives, it never aired. and they asked about it for the next 5 years. I remember I was doing this bit on Conan where I was playing that guy from Shine. Remember that movie Shine? Jeffrey Rush. And I was doing a skit where I was playing Jeffrey Rush, and it was airing that night, and my whole family waited up, extended relatives. The skit got cut. It's like I never – so I might not have shared about Sex and the City and just kind of moved it. But I was definitely beyond thrilled. Oh, I was so excited.
That is so cool.
Man.
I was on a second date with a girl, and she invited me over because she was on Blue Bloods. And it was like her and all of her close friends, and I didn't know her that well. It was like a second date. I was really excited for her. She's like, thanks for coming. And it was like 45 minutes in. We're all like waiting and like drinking and stuff. And then we were fast forwarding through. And then we looked, and she was like, I just realized that my episode airs next week. It was like, because everyone was so encouraging, and also like everyone was like, oh, so what do we do? Like, do we finish the episode?
And everybody's like, I'm not finishing this episode.
Like, we know it ends with them around a family dinner.
Exactly.
Oh, poor thing.
It was one of those. Thankfully, she was in it, though. She didn't get cut. So it was like, it was an uncomfortable night, but all in all, she was still in it.
But I tell you, it's that shame cake that actors eat for decades. It's just one piece of shame cake after the next, and it just builds you to where you are.
You know, it'd be great if you run into Kim Cattrall again and you re-apologize, and then it just comes back. You're like, it was uncomfortable and separately, but I finally want to get this out.
And she starts telling people around me how
I'm She's like, yeah, dude, Tony Hale's really, he's weird. I mean, he keeps on bringing this thing up. Oh, that was 20 years ago, but he's still bringing it up.
Oh, gosh. But it was also that kind of Southern gentleman-y thing in my head of like, oh my God, she's going to love me. I'm so respectful and such a gentleman. The exact opposite.
That is like when I first moved to New York, in my first like 3 months here, I was looking for like any work, and there was a PA job because I'd worked like film production back in North Carolina, and there was a PA job that some guy that I'd worked in New York, I worked on a job in North Carolina. The guy was from New York. He was like, if you come to New York and you need work, let me know. And so he forwarded me to like his production coordinator, and it was a job for Maxim magazine. And I had no work at all and had just moved here. And so they were like, yeah, we want to book you. Like, you'll be a PA. You'll just be helping out. And I was like, what is the shoot? And it was like some sort of like lingerie shoot or something like that. Oh. And I remember I like talked to the production coordinator, and I was just like, yeah, I just, you know, I don't want to be like a bad guy though. You know, I want to make, and I like went into a whole thing where I was just like, you know, I want to be respectful. And then finally she was like, well, yeah, I mean, the shoot is going to be, it's going to be a lingerie shoot. I mean, it's going to be very sexy. Like, the girl's lying on the ground the whole time. And we kept talking. She was like, if you're not comfortable, maybe it's best you don't work. And I was like, well, you know, I appreciate you being upfront about it. And maybe I didn't take the job. And then I probably didn't get months of work out of that.
I will say this though. What's interesting is it's the exact opposite for me to say something to her. It almost brings to light the situation. And I don't know if it's because she doesn't, or people just don't want to recognize that to the Maxim thing, like I'm laying on grass in lingerie. Right. And when somebody comes up and says, hey, I know this is awkward and I know you're half naked and I'm sorry. It almost brings to light something that they don't want to think about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. Yeah.
You know,
I guarantee you, had I done the Maxim job, it would have just been like, oh, this is, you know, this is Christy, and be like, hey, how's it going? Like, everything would have been normal at the moment that one person stops and is like, listen, I know what we're doing is really weird, but let's not make it weird.
It is kind of crazy to consider, like, there is not a situation, like, the craziest role you would have to be in for a guy to do the baseline of nudity that's expected for just an average female role is kind of crazy to think about. Because I'm like, I just rewatching that episode, I'm like, yeah, they're naked all the time, and there's it would have to be a crazy, insane art film to even show like a little bit of my penis in a movie. Like, and it's kind of insane.
That's also the title of a crazy art film. It's called A Little Bit of My Penis.
A Little Bit of My Penis.
It's a beautiful film.
It is a really good film. It's Italian. It's gorgeous.
It really is. Do you guys also talk about the rest of it? How does this work? Because I watched the whole thing.
So like we're watching it through for the first time. So we've seen up until season 6 now. We started this like 2 years ago and we've slowly been watching it.
Okay.
So like we have heard, because we, you know, talk to people who are fans of the show, we know things that happen, but like we haven't seen the whole show. So we don't fully know.
So you have not seen the show
that happens.
The one that I was on?
We have seen the one that you're on.
Okay, got it.
Yes. We have watched
because
that one.
Let me tell you now, this is what's... Oh, go ahead.
Well, you finish and then you finish your thought here, and then we'll have John, we'll go to a break, and then we'll describe it to the listeners and stuff.
Yeah. Well, I haven't seen this episode in over 20 years. This is the first time me watching it in 20 years. And guys, it was so wild because so many things, A, that I completely forgot about, but B, that was my time period. So all of that, the way people dressed, the way people talked, all the locations of New York I recognize. But the crazier thing is in that scene where she goes to the fashion show and they tell her that she's going to be in panties, like jeweled panties.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And she's like, I'm not wearing this. And then she noted, no, wait, maybe this is after that. Maybe this is before that. But anyways, she hears that Frank Rich is also in the show, and she's like, Frank Rich was the executive producer on Veep. I know Frank Rich. And so
what?
So like Frank Rich and I have been friends for, you know, 7 years on Veep, and we spent so much time together on Veep. I completely forgot that he was referenced in that episode.
That is crazy.
Is he the gentleman that walks out?
No, that's Ed Koch.
Oh, that's Ed Koch.
That's the mayor,
Ed
Koch. Yeah.
And I was waiting, since I hadn't seen in a long time. I was like, is Frank going to show up? And the wild thing is like in the scene, it says Frank Rich and Fran Lebowitz are this other thing. Well, years ago, we were doing we were having a little gathering, a Veep gathering at my house years ago. And it was after this panel in LA. And so my wife and I had a little thing at our house and people came over and Frank brought Fran to our house. And I got to meet Fran Lebowitz, and she was delightful and funny and all this kind of stuff. And then I'm watching the episode and I'm like, what? This is crazy.
I just never
even knew that I completely forgot about it.
That's crazy.
That episode is incredibly star-studded. There are so many. There's so many people in it. Whether it's the names and not just the Heidi Klum, but you have Alan Cumming in it. You
have Margaret Cho.
It's just like such a wild.
And when Heidi
episode.
Klum walks over her on the runway,
yes.
Oh man,
oh, that's great. That's a great moment.
Well, John, will you give us a breakdown for everyone who's listening? Give a breakdown of what storylines, and then we'll go through them.
Yeah. So the main storyline is she is kind of thinking about narcissists and analyzing yourself and understanding yourself versus how you see yourself versus how your friends see yourself. Charlotte, which I think is like the least outgoing, or like it's the least prevalent storyline, has, I forgot what the term is, but she has a sad vagina, depressed vagina, and she's kind of exploring her vagina for the first time and visually seeing it. And it's in the middle when she's in the middle with her and Trey, kind of figuring out, I think they're recently separated. Mm-hmm. Samantha is getting nude pictures of herself, and because she wants to remember her body when it was in peak physical shape. Little does she know that Tiger's going to be in the room, so
that's,
you know,
right.
She's got a lot to be worried
get
about.
Get ready.
Miranda Protecting is training her. For the marathon, and she goes on a date with a gentleman, and she feels a little bit insecure about herself, but he really makes her feel good about herself, and then he eventually says that you're a little too full of yourself. And then lastly, Carrie is invited. Carrie is the pretty dominant plot in this episode. She's invited to walk the runway at a New York style show, mm-hmm. in which there's both models and New York socialites that walk it. And she's wrestling with the fact and whether or not she's a model, if she can do this, and has a brief love affair with the photographer. But there's also a storyline with Stanford and
Mario Cantone.
Mario Cantone's character. So a lot of self-reflection and kind of understanding who you are versus how the world sees you in this episode.
Yeah.
It's a great episode.
It's a huge episode. It really made – I was in such a fog and only watched myself, speaking of narcissism, in this episode. I probably didn't watch the whole episode. But it's a very well-written episode. It really makes – me appreciate that writing. I honestly never really watched the show. I only watched my bit on it. Speaking of narcissism on Zoom, all I can stare is at myself. I'm just putting that out there as well.
I've done the same thing.
But it really made me appreciate the writing because I never noticed that.
We've mentioned this before, but when we started the podcast, none of us had seen the shows, like maybe one or two, but like we hadn't seen the series. And I think our take on it was going to be a little more like, remember the show? Like, this isn't as good as people like, and instead it's like so many episodes have just blown us away with like, the storylines and the plots and how it all comes together. It's just like solid TV writing.
We knew this already, but the caliber of their acting chops too, like they are, all four of them are such phenomenal actors. There's always a scene in an episode that just is insanely moving or hilarious they're all really great.
And I think it's interesting that the way they kind of played with stuff where Miranda is accused of being full of herself, but then what's her name, Kim Cattrall's character, Samantha, super full of herself, and it's kind of praised that way, and Miranda's like the least full of herself, you know.
They're really good, like especially in this episode, they're really good at themes, and the best episodes are when they can weave a theme like that, where it's like being full of themselves and you see it go from character to character, and they are able to pull off four storylines. Because then if you think about it, like Carrie's thing is that she's walking on the runway and has to have the confidence to do that. So she's also like supposed to be full of herself. And they play that stuff up so well. Like when it works, it works really, really well.
I also love any kind of a real picture of kind of the fashion industry and kind of the what they're putting out versus what the reality is. I just posted this thing on Instagram where I did this photo shoot, had this suit on, and then I posted what the suit looked at from behind, and it was like the whole jacket is cut up the back, my arms are completely cut up. They had to put this elastic patch on my pants because they didn't fit. And it was just like, that was the reality of the situation. And nobody ever sees that.
I was a groomsman in a wedding probably 4 years ago, and I'm a big guy. You probably can't see, but I'm a pretty hefty fella. Corey and I both wore husky pants when we were, you know, growing up.
We both wore huskies, tough skins. Yeah.
The groom decided to order all of the suits from Korea. So, you know, I got a triple XL, their biggest size suit. I try the jacket on the day of the wedding because that's where I got to him, and it just definitely wasn't going to fit. So the mother of the groom, have I told this story before? I actually had to cut the jacket and sew in the curtains from the hotel room in order for me to get it to fit.
That's so, like, a Gone with the Wind situation.
Yeah, exactly. Under my arms, there were just the curtains from the hotel in which she had sewed into the jacket for me to get to stand up next to him. So
that's amazing. Fantastic.
That's the underbelly of the fashion world.
Hopefully you have pictures of that.
I think I do somewhere. Yeah, I need to dig them up.
That brings incredible. Us to this week's sponsor. Ladies and gentlemen, this is brought to you by Red Roof Inn.
and the story prowess of Judy
podcast,
Kirby.
They're going to fully sue you for those curtains.
Yeah, exactly.
Completely.
We asked permission. They thought it was funny. I think we paid for them. But yeah, it was. I can relate.
That is so funny. That's hilarious.
I think, it was fun seeing the behind the scenes stuff. And it was funny because it's like, something like Zoolander is just going to be full on making fun of it. But yeah. I'm sure there must have been a pressure for an episode like this that's already so big in the fashion industry to do justice to a fashion show.
Especially in New York. And the even little things, another thing I didn't realize in kind of a full circle moment is my wife is a makeup artist. And when we were dating, because we started dating probably a year or two after I shot this, and I remember hearing a lot about Kevin O'Quan. Like she just loved, loved, loved Kevin O'Quan. And she had, mm-hmm. and Kevin O'Quan was the makeup artist that came up to Sarah Jessica Parker and was like, hey, mm-hmm.
yes,
don't worry, I've got you covered. And there's a book, his book is facing the camera. And that book was always in my wife's apartment the entire time we were dating. Wow. I would always see this book. And I was like, I just never noticed any of that stuff.
Yeah, that's when we first posted about this episode the first time we watched it, I had never, that's just a person that it's like never was ever on my radar. And so many people messaged us and it was like realizing there's this like legend out there who is like an industry, like the top of their industry. And I was like, I never even knew that was
an industry. Yeah, and he passed away. You know. I think he passed away several years ago, but there's a documentary about him.
Wow. Yeah, I feel like that's people in that show that they get really deep into New York culture too, of just different people like that. I mean, even Patricia Field, who did all the fashion for the show.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But they do a lot of they like pay homage to things like that like you would know or you would have heard of maybe only if you lived in New York. Mm-hmm. 'Cause there's famous and there's like New York famous. There's like things that like when you live in New York, it might be the same in LA too, but like there are things that you know because it's people that work for media outlets or magazines or something like that. And it tends to be in things like fashion or, you know, people that work behind the scenes in that town and you know about them. They hit on that a lot in the show.
Yeah. I think you've seen it at my apartment, Corey, but I have an old, it's like an encyclopedia of character actors. And I think someone gave it to me. And there's like, they have different things next to them that are like, they give them little medals. And there's like a few character actors that they like give an award that like this person like made it out and became like the next level. And John C. Reilly was one.
Oh,
and Philip Seymour Hoffman, a few people. And I feel like the type of famous you're talking about in New York, Corey, would be like Fran Lebowitz for a while.
Yeah.
But she graduated to that next level, but she would definitely just be New York famous for a long time. And now it's also
the same thing. Like he might've graduated out of New York famous, but like Pat Kiernan from New York One, like the anchor. Pat Kiernan is like a legend. And like, I was listening to the new Beastie Boys book. They have like an audiobook version and they have different things read by different people from around New York. And Pat Kiernan reads a chapter and like, he was on 30 Rock. They did a couple things about him on 30 Rock, but that's like only someone you would know about in New York because he's on New York One, the TV station. There's no other outlet for that.
Yeah.
But like, there's different people like that.
What I noticed though is they mentioned Dolce and Gabbana, but Alan Cumming wasn't playing one of them. I think he was playing, I guess, like a stylist or something like that. But I don't think he was playing. I didn't get the sense that they were playing the actual designers.
I don't think so.
That's the sense I got as well. I think he was just one of the stylists.
Yeah.
Would Alan Cumming, was it confusing? Because would he be? He was already in like. He was already the Bond villain by that point. I think he was the Bond villain in Goldeneye, was it?
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I wonder if you're watching that, if you're like, is that Alan Cumming or is he playing? Because there were some people playing themselves and then there are some people that were actors. So I wonder if he was big enough at that time to be like, wait, is that Alan Cumming playing Alan Cumming?
Yeah. I think he had done Cabaret in New York.
Okay.
I remember being in New York during that time period and he was doing Cabaret and it was like a huge deal when he did it.
Yeah.
But he was definitely big enough to like play himself, but he wasn't playing himself there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now when you were on set, did you the scene at Silver Cup with Kim Cattrall and did you see other people from the show or any of the other actresses there? Cause I know that like, you know, everyone has different shooting days and stuff like that.
Of course I was hoping to run into all of them and then they were going to see me and be like, oh my gosh, who's this guy? We need to cast him and everything. None of that happened. But I just saw Kim, and then Jeff and I, the photographer, I remember our trail. I remember exactly what our trailer looked like. It was one of those honey wagons where there's like 10 different rooms. And I had my little closet of a room, and then there was like a curtain separating. It was like a, it felt like a prison thing, 'cause I had a little toilet and then I had a little bench and then there was a curtain separating my room with Jeff's room. But I was just through it, 'cause I walked in and my wardrobe was hanging there and the script was there. And I was just like, I've made it. I've made it. I'm Tiger.
So, but that's amazing. Well, but like you, okay. So you mentioned the Frank Rich thing.
Yeah.
Were there any other?
And at the time, he was what was called the Broadway Butcher. His title was, he was a huge theater critic, and his stuff could, if he wrote a bad review, and he's like the sweetest man. I mean, if you guys knew him, he's just the sweetest man. But his work was very, very, his reviews were very valued on Broadway. And if he gave a bad review, it could actually close a show.
Wow.
And so he got the nickname the Broadway Butcher. But his name was like all over the art section, Frank Rich. So when we got on Veep and I found that he was an executive producer, there was like this like, holy shit, Frank Rich, yeah. Because he had, again, the sweetest man, but he had this kind of reputation around him that was really crazy.
Did he make a concerted effort to transition into, like, I guess, what is his role if he was a reviewer and then got into producing Veep? Had he produced before? Or?
Well, he was he kind of went from theater into kind of the political world. And so he then transitioned to New York Magazine, was is still kind of the political consultant and very much along that, in that world. And then, so therefore he made the connection with HBO, with politics. And he knows a lot of that,
And
world.
His son is Simon Rich, who wrote on SNL, right? Is that true?
Yeah.
Oh, well,
his grandson is Richie Rich, of course.
His grandson's Richie Rich. Super rich
who's now
child.
60, which is weird. Yeah.
But. It's weird, but he still looks like a kid.
Yeah, that's okay.
He still makes it rain.
Yeah. Wait, so, but with the Frank Rich thing, was there anybody else from like that episode, or were there any other connections of anyone later on? Like, even people you didn't necessarily meet that, or like, yeah, because you didn't, like, Frank Rich was in the episode, and then you knew, but like, was there ever like a run-in with Margaret Cho later? Anyone, since it's like such a star-studded episode, was there anyone else like from your time as a young actor then?
I wish I had seen it much earlier, like years ago, because a lot of these people, like, I think I did some, like, they brought back Laugh-In on Netflix, and she was there. And then her and I were also on a panel for, Anthony Anderson's game show, I think, or something. Okay. And her and I were like, we were contestants, and it's having not seen the Sex and the City episode, like a true actor would, seeing the whole episode rather than just your scene. it would have been fun to chat about it, you know?
Yeah.
But
I think,
and so like, but even like I ran into Heidi Klum, once years ago. I mean, she wouldn't remember, but she was very nice, and just kind of stuff like that. Like, I guess I need to look over stuff just to be well versed in it, because it'd been fun to talk about it.
I think other people again, but just
by
need
the way,
to...
I was like 5 seconds of the show. They'd be like, "I have no idea what you're talking about."
Totally. I think but most people would have done the same thing.
That's one of the cool things about watching this, since it's set in New York, and since it went for so long. So like, I don't know if you realize how many internet lists you're on, that's like actors that you don't know that are on Sex and the City. And it's like Bradley Cooper has like two lines, you know, like he's
really?
Like, oh yeah. Yeah. And, I mean, Justin Thoreau, Will Arnett was on it. Yeah. And,
Gaffigan is on it. in the episode after you, I think.
Really? Is he a boyfriend?
And it's Gaffigan is in season 4, episode 3, and he plays Miranda's, like the guy Miranda's dating at that time. Jim Gaffigan
really?
Does.
Because
he
that
doesn't
time,
close yeah. the door when he goes to the bathroom.
Yeah, oh, and his whole deal is that he poops with the door open and then she can't handle it.
Because at that time, fun. That's a fun thing to learn because that was the exact time I was in New York when he was doing that because I was doing a sketch. I had a sketch comedy group called King Baby. And his wife, Jeannie, was in the sketch group with me. And I remember when they started dating. And then years later, they obviously got married and stuff like that. But his album was called King Baby. And he asked us if it would be okay if he named his album after our sketch group. We were like, sure.
That's so cool. Corey told me the other day about that connection. He's like, yeah, he used to do a sketch group called King Baby. And I told him, I was like, Gaffigan has a special name, King Baby. So we did we put all that together without us even knowing the story.
There's a fair amount of King Baby graffiti in Brooklyn right now. There's a mailbox like 10 blocks away from me that has a huge King Baby graffiti on it.
I promise you it has nothing to do with the sketch group, but everything to do with Gaffigan stuff.
Where did you perform with your sketch group?
We would perform at the Lambs Theater on 43rd Street. This was before it was turned into a hotel, which it is now. This is years ago when it was kind of a shelter, like a housing situation for those not homeless, but kind of those who were looking for housing, who were kind of having a tough time. They had this theater. It was a church. But then I think a hotel took it over and stuff.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Ladies and gentlemen.
What are you doing?
What do you mean?
Keep it simple.
I'm making the promo.
Just keep it simple. Just say, hey, we're the Brav Bros, two guys that talk about Bravo.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're the Brav Bros.
No.
Oh.
Dude, stop with the voice. Keep it simple.
I've seen promos on TV, dude. This is how you get the fans engaged. This is how you get listeners. We're trying to get listeners here. If we just say, oh, we're two dudes that talk about Bravo, people are going to get tired of it already. We need some oomph.
All right, then fine. Let's try to do it with your voice.
Brav Bros.
Good job.
I have a question about, I'm glad that you watched the episode and you lived in New York during 1999. What, after watching the episode, what was there anything other than the people that really struck a chord that felt very New Yorkish? Was there anything in the episode that they nailed New York-wise? Like the diner that they ate in or the club that they went in the beginning.
That diner, I want to say, was because I remember walking by that diner. If it's the same diner, I think it was below Union Square on Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it was because I remember the silver tables. And I guess, did they use that diner a lot?
I don't think it's this one, but there was a diner on Houston and
Silver Spurs.
Silver Spurs, Houston, and what? Like something
Houston
like that?
And,
Bleecker or something? No, they don't.
No, it's
anyway, right
I,
there.
I don't. It's a weird street, but it's like
It's like an organic ice cream shop now. But they use Silver Spurs in a lot of them, and I was trying to see if that was it. But
yeah,
I don't think
you know
it was.
What? I will say what I appreciate is that the apartment sizes were realistic. I remember watching the show, and I was like, yeah, these are realistic. I mean. Because Charlotte was obviously wealthier, I guess, because she was her husband. Right. But like Sarah Jessica Parker's character, Miranda, it was realistic New York apartments, which I think it was a huge success for the show because people could relate to that in New York at least.
Yeah, because that was like in Friends. Everyone always talked about the Friends apartment was like this giant open set that was nothing like a real New York apartment.
Yes.
And they'll have lines in Friends every once in a while that's like, it's rent stabilized. But even people that have rent stabilized apartments from 1850 are like, no, that's not like.
No, I can't afford that.
Yeah.
There was a lot of, I think watching it was very just, I mainly just had the wave of like how being in New York, how massive that show was. Like, it was just, and every single actor in New York wanted to get on it. So for someone like me, even though I had two lines, it was that resume credit you wanted. It was kind of like a Law and Order credit, you know, where it was like, you could get that TV credit, and I got my SAG card somewhere else, but there was definitely like, even those two lines, it was like, okay, I got a Sex and the City credit. I'm excited about that.
Yeah. Did it feel like after you got that credit, was there anything that like, did it get you acting respect from people where they're like, oh, Sex and the City, or like, oh, I saw your episode?
I think I probably thought it did, but I don't think it did at all. And it's also one of those things like, yeah, getting this can lead to this. It's like, it's all such a crapshoot. And yeah, you realize just how it's just the grace. It's all just grace that I'm even able to be working, because there's no ladder in this business. You know, there's nothing.
For us, just like as a fun little inside joke here, next time you're doing like some big interview, if someone's like, just take us through what happened in your career, you're like, well, I played Tiger in Sex and City. I got called to play Buster Bluth. And then after that, they just said, you know, do you want to do Toy Story 4?
That is the exact timeline.
And Terry Gross will be like, I've never heard, what is Tiger from what?
The best though is doing that little bit. I remember specifically because this was years ago before the digital age, where you had to go to a certain editor to get a VHS tape for your reel. And oh, I remember like, make the most of this Tiger clip. Like, just that sense of like, if you have to extend the shot, if you have to like zoom in, I mean, make this the highlight.
Play it back in slow-mo.
Yeah, exactly.
I will say it is a really funny clip. You do an incredible job in that clip.
Well,
you kind of look down, and then when the camera goes off, it kind of startles you a little bit. It's a great clip.
If you could know what was happening internally in my body, I was doing it. And then once they would say cut, there was just that sense of like, you know how you mumble? You're like, I can do this. Whereas like everybody else is like, can we move on? I'm like, well, maybe I can give this reaction. No, it's just like all that just stupid ass stuff.
That's so funny. Wait, so when you shot, because like the way it actually goes, when they shot the close-ups on you, what were you reacting to? Because I doubt like they just have Kim Cattrall standing there still naked. Do you remember? I mean, I know this is 20 years ago.
I don't remember. I'm sure when they were doing us, I'm sure she put on rope. Actually, she might not have even been there. I can't remember, but I'm sure she was. But I'm sure she put on a robe and things like that. Yeah. And I don't even think we were there for, they probably pulled us away. I don't remember. They probably pulled us away too when she did her really kind of revealing shot.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
No, I just realized, learned I can delete myself so I don't have to stare at myself.
In Zoom.
35 minutes later.
Okay, that's funny. I deleted all of you, so I'm only looking at myself.
Great, that's what I'm doing the whole time.
Yeah, it's great.
I have to say one of the more emotionally like well-played and sad moments was what's his name? Willie Garson's character.
Oh, yeah.
Stanford
being so excited because there's so many little like romantic letdowns that he gets in the show.
Yeah, I completely forgot about that, but again, I've clearly never seen the show. But that was actually very heart-wrenching because you just also, I don't remember Mario's character's name, but
Anthony,
just how much of a douchebag to this other guy, like at least fake kindness. But again, that's the TV world, but you're just kind of like, oh, I hope people aren't that mean, because man, that's rough.
Well, there's another episode where Stanford gets really excited about a date he's going to go on. And this is the pre-internet dating. Like, I think it's an actual blind date. And the guy walks up to him on the street and is just like, no, and walks away. And
okay,
I was like, I guess I like when I watched it this time, and I think we're more from processing the episodes so much, like I think we're almost more invested in some of the character arcs than maybe even some of the writers are at times.
Yeah.
Of like,
yeah.
But I was like, I think when we first saw it, we're like, oh, that's funny. And I watched this time and I'm like, man, Stanford just really gets it from all angles.
He just
took
it on the chin so hard.
Yeah. And I felt so bad for him. I'm like, you know,
it's also
not everyone can be Ed Harris.
It's also not a full circle moment for him, because if you remember in the bar, he says to her, hey, you are a model. Like, you are, you can do this. Da, da, da. And then she ends up doing it. And then she says to him, hey, you really can see, you're more than this. And then he ends up getting rejected.
Rejected. Yeah.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, that's true. And it's then, like, yeah, he gets built up and then taken back down away.
Yeah.
And the writers are like, this just goes to show you, if you put yourself out there, it's not always going to go great.
Yeah.
Listen, we want to bring up the reality of that things can be hard in this world. You know,
life's not fair. I don't know. Did you not get the theme? Life's not fair.
Come on. That's what it's about.
I want to know where, when you guys were thinking of a podcast, how this came up.
Oh, so it's a story we've told before. So like we had all known each other and we were all friends and we had had different experiences with the show. I had seen like a few episodes through a girl that I dated. Like she was a musical theater actress. She would watch it on tour when she was on tour, like with her roommate. And then, so she had the DVD, so she would watch it. So I had like seen it with her a little bit. And then like years later, cause I like shows about New York, when it was just like, I wanted to like chill, I would turn on a show about New York and I'd be like, oh, I'd watch one of those episodes that like we had watched or whatever, you know. Like I'd watch that or bored us. So like, that was my experience. John's experience was sort of similar to that. Yeah.
My wife, also a musical theater actor, she would watch the show when she would go on contracts, when she didn't have any friends. And so it like kind of became her, these women became her friends when she was new in a place and didn't know people. And she would always have it on in the background, like right when we got married. And at first I would just kind of not pay attention to it, but then I'd be, you know, doing the dishes, kind of peeking around and seeing what's going on.
Yeah,
and
Corey
and I were talking one day and I was like, you know what's really good? Sex in the City. And he's like, I know, me too. Like, and so...
And I was like, I'd never seen it. And then Kevin had...
I used to give walking tours around New York City. And I would do like Greenwich Village or like the World Trade Center area, Financial District. And one time someone offered me, they're like, can you do Sex in the City tours? And I had never seen the show, but I was like, oh yeah, for sure. So I got the script for the tour and I memorized all the sites and stuff, but I had never seen an episode. And I just started giving Sex in the City walking tours around the West Village for like 4 months. And about,
oh wow.
So we would go by all the places. And then sometimes people would ask, they'd be like, is this like where Steve and Miranda, like, and if I had enough goodwill with the group, like an hour in or something, I'd be like, I just know what is in the script. Like I've never seen it before. And people would get so excited. And then they would like tell me all about it. So
wait, so let me ask you this. What from this episode did you use anything from this episode on your tour?
I don't think so.
Cause I might have noticed where Mario was if it was by that Bed Bath and Beyond on Sixth Avenue.
Yeah.
He was carrying all those Bed Bath and Beyond bags.
Yeah.
I wonder if that was it. Yeah.
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 I know exactly where that is.
That scene felt a lot differently. Would they have filmed that like during the middle? Would they have not have blocked off the street and filmed it in a different way than they do normal scenes? Because it felt like the camera was a little bit more shaky and
it was very just green grass, very Bourne Identity.
Yeah. Would that have been something they would have done back then, is not like receive permits to shoot on that street and just go out and do it anyway?
It kind of fit Anthony's character.
Yeah, I also think, like, I know they would have had permits, but they did say that when they were shooting this, and Tony, like, you might know this, but, like, they were saying, like, they were one of the first shows to shoot on the street in New York and, like, just shoot out in New York and without using sets. Like, Seinfeld, you know, shot in L.A. Used fake, exteriors and stuff, but they said they were one of the first ones to do that. So it might have just been that they were such an early show to do that. And maybe that's why it was like that. I mean, I guess Law and Order probably did it all the time too.
Yeah. I have a question. In addition to this, if you were living in Wisconsin and you were having massive New York nostalgia, in addition to this show, what would be the other show you would watch to reminisce?
Oh man, that is a great question. Like New York, I have two. I'll start. I have two. One would be the show Bored to Death.
Yeah.
Which, did you ever see that? Jason Schwartzman and Zach Galifianakis, Ted Danson. Because Bored to Death is all in Brooklyn, and we all three of us live in Brooklyn, and there are so many scenes that are by my old apartment right off of Bergen Street. And that's one of those shows that in Sex and the City would maybe be like this for you. Bored to Death is one of those where you go around and you're like, oh my gosh, that's everything from like 2010 in Brooklyn, like 10 years ago. I'd say either that one or Flight of the Conchords. Because Flight of the Conchords came out the month that I moved to New York City in 2005, I think. And it's all like Lower East Side, New York. And it's all these comedy actors back then.
Yes.
That people didn't really know. It's like Aziz Todd Barry is in it. Todd Barry.
Yeah, Aziz
Eugene
is the
Merman,
fruit guy.
Kristen Schaal. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's the fruit guy. So those are mine.
Ooh, I like that.
I would say mine. I have not rewatched a single episode, but I remember, I think it was because when I first moved here and I was like, some episodes are similar to like actual life, but I watched Girls as it was on week to week. That was like, it was a huge, I don't know that like after season one, I think it got sucked so quickly into people hate watching it. And there was so much negativity around the way people covered it.
Yes. Yes.
And I just remember always being like, I don't know, I like this show. And
that started when Veep started. We were around the same time as we watched it a lot. It's a really, really good show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll be a little bit different. It's funny. I actually just watched the movie Squid and the Whale. I know it's not a TV show, but it's filmed. It's filmed in Park Slope, right where a lot of us live. So there was a lot of fun kind of seeing where they are in that show movie, which filmed several years ago and set, I think, in the 80s, but still.
Yeah.
It really is a rush of nostalgia when you see something like that that you resonate with so strongly personally.
Yeah.
What about you?
I think that I'm actually going to watch those now because I don't, I don't know. I don't really have one. I don't really have, I mean, I don't really watch, I'm that guy that don't watch a ton of it TV, but like when I see this, I'm like, oh, I need to rewatch that. Cause I feel like I haven't seen all Flight of the Conchords all the way through.
Yeah.
I've seen a lot of episodes of Girls, but I haven't seen them all the way through. Like I haven't seen 30 Rock all the way through. And my wife worked on SNL.
Yeah.
And so I just really, that kind of stuff, I want to binge and just do it.
Mm-hmm.
30 Rock is so good.
When you lived in New York, where did you live, and what would be one, not show you watch, but what's one thing that you miss about New York City?
I miss the accessibility. I miss the accessibility of it. Like LA is very spread out. It's really tough to connect to people. Whereas in New York, I always tell like people who want to pursue the business, I mean, it might be different now, but I always encourage people to try New York just because it's much easier to find community. It's much easier. It's 20 minutes on the subway and you can connect to people. LA, it's, if you're living on the West Side and you're on the, if someone's on the West Side, you're on the East Side, you're just rarely going to see them. So I miss that. I think there was always something going on, but I was also in my 20s and 30s. So it's like, I didn't have a family. So it was just like one party to the next. But I just remember that it was really easy to connect to people.
Yeah. Is there you've been in LA for a while. Do you get that same nostalgia? Would there be like an LA show? If you were like, we move to another place outside of Los Angeles, is there a show or even a movie? Cause there's so many movies set in LA.
Yeah. I love that. I asked the question that I don't have an answer for. Any of that.
I do that all the time.
I can't think of one. I can't think of one. I'm sure there's a ton.
Yeah. I was trying to think. I was like, maybe Mulholland Drive.
What if I was like Veep? I'll watch Veep.
It's Veep. You're like, yeah. That reminds me of my time in LA because that was a really good show for me. Really because I was one of the stars. And yeah. I just remember a lot of those times.
I remember the craft service. I remember the stage.
Yeah. So sad. Well, we can't thank you enough for coming on to do this. It really means a lot.
Thanks so much.
I love you're doing this. And it was encouraging to me. I want to watch the show again because it really was this rush of nostalgia that made me really miss New York and appreciate the show that I didn't really appreciate much. I mean, it's a great show.
It's a fantastic show.
It really is a great show. Yeah.
Do we do a Cosmo rating for the rewatches?
Oh yeah, we should do one. So
go ahead. Yeah. Corey.
So we do a thing for every episode called the Cosmo rating, the Cosmopolitan, the drink that they all drink. So we rate every episode from 1 to 5 Cosmos. And you can use half and quarter Cosmos. You know, like bad episode gets like 2 Cosmos, great episode gets 5. 5's the highest. So I don't remember what we gave it on our first watch. But
I'm pretty sure I gave this a 5. This is one of my few 5s I gave, I think.
Well, so on the rewatch, so we'll pick what we give it. We'll go ahead. We can re-rate it for ourselves, I think.
Yeah.
But you can think about it if you want to think about what you would give it.
I think I know my answer because I would say this might sound a little harsh, but I would give it a 4.5 because it's one of my pet peeves in watching a show is when something feels liney, where someone's shouting out just well-written lines. Uh-huh. And I felt, even though it's incredibly well written and very funny and very well acted, there was a couple of times I was like, yeah, that just sounds like someone reciting a really, really smart line rather than the way somebody talks.
Yeah. Tony, I feel like you would dock this series many Cosmos. That is how the whole show feels. But I think you're absolutely right.
But very fun and stuff. But it's like there were times it really felt organic. And then sometimes I was like, yeah, that's just someone like giving a really good line.
It, totally. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Whenever the gals get themselves in like at a baseball game or anything that has just like very easy puns, it just becomes like just a pun machine of just being like, sticks and balls. I'd hit the ball, blah, blah, blah. Like
Now keep in mind, I was on Arrested Development, which was like one quirky, weird pun, weird line after the next. So it's like, I'm as guilty of it as ever. I mean, not that Mitch Hurwitz thing, but it's like my character was like pretty much a cartoon character. So it's like, I can't, there wasn't much organic about Buster Bluth. So I'm guilty of it myself.
We did have a Loose Seal question on Instagram. Do you remember what it was? I feel like we need to ask it.
Oh, did we? Okay, hold on.
There was a question. Yeah. It was, if you pull up the post that we put up a post on our Instagram that we're like, we're going to be talking to Tony Hale tonight. And we asked if anyone had any questions. And there was an Arrested Development forward question. I believe it's one of the first comments
just said,
on there.
I always hated that they shot Samantha on medium format film, but the contract sheet said 35mm. I blame Tiger.
I was thinking the same thing.
I blame Tiger.
Oh my gosh. That's amazing. That was another thing I forgot to say is when they're in the diner and they're looking at contact sheets of her pictures, I have a very, very strong memory of getting headshots back and always looking at each picture just to see which one it was, because this obviously we weren't in the digital age and we would get
your own headshots.
Yeah, my own headshots. And you would always go to the print shop to get the contact sheet back, and you'd have all your pictures and you'd have to circle and see which one's the best that you want to print.
And
up.
you'd use one of those.
Oh yeah. They'd always have those at the place that you could use to look at.
Oh my!
Did you
goodness.
Go to Reproductions? Was the place called Reproductions? Yes. That was like the place. And when we all moved here, it was like all switching to digital.
Yes.
But I remember they were like, "You have to go to Reproductions. Yes. You have to like put in what package you want."
And it was like it was on. I want to say on like 39th Street, and it was on the second floor. And you'd walk in, it was just the smell of photo fluid, and you'd get high stacks of photos, and everybody was really eager to get them, and then they'd mail them out, and the people would just throw them away.
That's amazing.
I think this is a great question to go out on. We got a really solid one here, which is...
Okay.
Let's finish our Cosmo ratings real quick.
Okay, let's finish our Cosmo ratings. So Tony gave a 4.5, yes. Very astute.
I love this episode, and I think it's watching it through the second time, I loved it even more. There's also a ton of excitement knowing that we were going to get to talk to Tony and seeing his character. So I got to give this episode a 5. It was just so fun rewatching it.
Yeah. I feel like when we listed off all the people that were in it, and I also think having you here talking to you and like getting some of the backstory, but like even aside from just like the backstory connection, I think listing and even just talking through more and even like the Frank Rich thing. And then we were like, oh yeah, Ed Koch is in it too. And like the theme, I think I have to give it a 5 too. Yeah.
I think, especially since we started from the beginning and this is one of our first rewatches, this still does, it holds up as like, there's sort of like a small outfit in the first season of being like, oh, we're just like hustling to get, and you can totally tell from watching this episode that this is when they got to flex their muscles and be like, we're superstars now. Like,
oh yeah. My God, superstars. Season 4, they were the hit.
Yeah. Yeah. And you feel it. And so I'm going to keep with my previous rating from the last time. And I'm going to give it 5 Cosmos. And I want to ask, we can all work on this together. From Katie Shook, she just said, what would Gary's Sex in the City storyline and episode be? So,
Gary from Veep.
So there's a crossover. The higher ups at HBO have been really, really insistent that this happen. And so there needs to be an actual crossover. And Gary's character shows up on a Sex in the City episode.
Yeah. And I think it would be a competition with Sarah Jessica Parker to be the assistant to Selena Meyer's fashion tribute for her designs. And everybody would be, her dresses would be there. All the designers would be that dress Selena. And I of course would think that I'm the one to help her curate this collection, but they bring in Carrie to curate it, and there's a big feud, and Samantha gets involved, and Samantha emasculates me all the time, but then kind of comes on to me, and then I get kind of interested in her maybe. So then we see Gary's dark side a little bit, but in the end Gary is pushed to the side and Carrie gets the glory for curating all of her dresses, when in actuality I was the one who picked them all out.
Wow.
That's incredible. That's amazing.
And I love how there's a little bit of meta-ness with you and Samantha. Like the viewers will know, like, oh, like he.
Yes. Yes.
That's Tiger. That's smart. That's Tiger.
Gary's Tiger comes out. That's what happens.
That's the theme continues. It's great.
Yes.
Yes.
That's great. Yeah. That's the best one. Well, Tony, thank you so much, man.
Guys,
thank you.
Thanks for having me. So fun. I love you doing this. You have a new listener.
Awesome. Well, thank you, everybody. Please go rate and review 5 Cosmos. And if we were too liney, you can give us 4.5. You know, yeah. But
oh,
if,
no. Now I feel bad. Now Michael no. Patrick King is going to be like, too liney. What the hell is he about?
But awesome. Thanks, and we'll see you next time, right, everybody.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you, guys. So much.
The Bradshaw Boys stars Corey Cavan, John Sieber, and Kevin James Doyle. The show is produced by Jeremy L. Balin. For more information on the guys, check out their website at bradshawboys.com, on social media at The Bradshaw Boys, and if you see them in the street, tip your glass. Thanks for listening.